Welcome to Field Notes, a new segment on the Old Mole Variety Hour that collects reports from on-the-ground social movements, past and present. I'm Sophie Smith. Today, we're heading into the desert to look at the humanitarian crisis on the southern border. Since 1994, the U.S. Border Patrol has adopted a strategy called Prevention Through Deterrence to control undocumented migration by concentrating walls, surveillance technology, and an army of federal agents in and around urban areas along the national boundary. The Border Patrol's enforcement goal has been to force those attempting to enter the United States without official permission into undertaking multi-day journeys on foot through the most rugged, isolated, and deadly regions of the borderlands, an enforcement strategy that aims to prevent and deter border crossing by putting people in mortal danger without access to food, water, or rescue in the desert. As a consequence, the remains of at least 10,000 people have been recovered from the U.S. borderlands since the 1990s, and the true number of border deaths is estimated to be at least four times that, as many people are dying of dehydration and exposure to the elements in areas that are so remote that their bodies are never encountered nor identified. As such, border solidarity workers refer to this as a crisis of death and disappearance, and it is a crisis that is only growing as U.S. foreign policy creates new refugees every day and legal avenues to entry are increasingly choked off. Today, I'm joined by Parker Deegan, my colleague and comrade. Parker and I both have a history of working with No More Deaths, a non-governmental humanitarian aid organization in southern Arizona that provides food, water, medical care, emergency shelter, search and rescue, and remains recovery efforts to those who come into distress inside of the United States while attempting this perilous journey. Parker and I have worked with No More Deaths Abuse Documentation and Advocacy Group to co-author a series of reports called The Disappeared: How U.S. Border Enforcement Agencies Are Fueling a Missing Persons Crisis. This series documents the largely unseen daily on-the-ground human rights abuses by U.S. agencies operating in the border region. And today we'll be discussing the fourth installment in our Disappeared series that we recently released. It's called Separate and Deadly: The Segregation of 911 Services in the Arizona Borderlands. Separate and Deadly examines what happens when those who come into distress have an emergency while crossing through the borderlands place a 911 call in Pima County, a county which has seen over half of the recorded deaths on the border since the start of the crisis 30 years ago. Greetings, Parker, and welcome to Field Notes. It's so great to have you here for our first episode.
Hi, Sophie. It's really nice to be here. Great to talk to you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Separate and Deadly, part four of the Disappeared series that we just released, supposedly our final entry into this series, though it seems to keep expanding as we find new paths of inquiry. Parker, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what inspired this report and kind of where it fits within the broader scope of the Disappeared project.
Yeah, for sure. So the Disappeared Report Project initially was conceived as a collaborative report series between No More Deaths and another organization called La Coalición de Derechos Humanos, who was operating a missing migrant crisis line where they would receive calls, mostly from family members whose loved ones had gone missing while crossing the border. No More Deaths developed a partnership with this organization where sometimes we would respond to search and rescue cases if there was sufficient information about where someone was lost that we could send a team out to search for them. So there were three main patterns that we wanted to document with this report. The first report is called Deadly Apprehension Methods, and it documents primarily the practice of chase and scatter by Border Patrol agents in the backcountry, where they'll chase after a group of people who are migrating together, either on foot, with a helicopter, on ATVs, or with horses, and cause that group to scatter and become separated from each other, which is often the beginning of this cycle of disappearance, where someone is disoriented and alone and separate from their group. And we also documented in our second report, Interference with Humanitarian Aid, which documents both the physical destruction of humanitarian aid supplies left in the desert, so stabbing water gallons, dumping out water and food, and we show in this report that Border Patrol is responsible for a lot of this destruction. And we also document in that report their targeting of humanitarian aid volunteers, raiding of humanitarian aid stations where people are seeking respite and medical care, and arrest of humanitarian volunteers, most notably with the case of Scott Warren, who was arrested for providing humanitarian aid and charged with felony smuggling. And then part three of the report is called Left to Die, and it is documenting Border Patrol's failure to respond to search and rescue requests. So this one really is targeting Border Patrol, putting out their own propaganda saying that they're rescuing people when the actual lived experience of families and humanitarian aid volunteers is that when they're really trying to get Border Patrol to search for somebody who's lost, there's a total lack of response. And so we found in that report, using data from the Derechos Humanos Missing Migrant Crisis Line, that 63% of the time a search was requested, there was no confirmed response from Border Patrol at all. And these are cases where there is significant information about where this person was lost. In the remaining cases where Border Patrol did activate some sort of response, we found that those responses were severely diminished. So they might go to a location and then call off their search even within an hour sometimes. We didn't document any searches that were longer than 3 days. Most of them, they called off the search within a day, even when they had not located the person.
Yeah, and so we're going to talk a little bit more about how this response system works and how it is that Border Patrol, a militarized enforcement agency that 99% of its federal budget goes towards enforcement efforts, is somehow being positioned as the primary and often sole responder to people who come into crisis while crossing the border.
And then so part four really arose out of the research we were doing for part three. So we knew just anecdotally as humanitarian aid volunteers and hearing the experiences of families that when people contact 911, they're really just immediately transferred to Border Patrol. So they call 911 and that call is routed to the county, to Pima County in this case. And Pima County, instead of responding with their own search and rescue resources, immediately profiles this person as undocumented and transfers the call to Border Patrol. And so we did put in a public records request while researching part three to get the recordings of these 911 calls. And we ended up getting thousands of calls back and realizing that this really was its own project that, you know, deserved its own report. And that's where part four came out of.
But then we also, when we started to look at some of the practices of the county, it really revealed in Pima County a lot more active complicity, knowing complicity in the county in terms of their role in funneling emergency calls from people lost in the county in distress away from emergency services into an enforcement agency, a militarized enforcement agency that is clearly not outfitted to respond to this kind of call volume or the nature of these requests. So I think part of this report has been really to say, you know, this isn't just a crisis of death and disappearance caused by federal policy, but one that's really reinforced and amplified by the kind of daily practices of border counties. And we really saw this. I wanted to just mention a case that really propelled our research on part four when we became aware of a case of a 17-year-old named Danielle who had been crossing through the border and had fainted. He was pretty far north on the outskirts of the city of Marana, so not far from an urban area. He had been traveling with companions and lost consciousness. Those companions had called his family members, who then contacted Border Patrol, reporting that Danielle was, you know, in a critical life or death scenario with a lot of geographical information about where he had been last seen, including like cross streets and intersection that was named. And Border Patrol refused to mobilize. And so then the family contacted that Derechos Humanos hotline that Parker was talking about for advocacy, and a volunteer then called 911 and talked to the Pima County dispatcher and said, there's a 17-year-old, he's unconscious, he was last seen near this intersection. And the 911 operator dispatched that to local sheriff's deputies, who then started responding and mobilizing local fire departments to respond. And then suddenly the volunteer wasn't getting any updates about the efforts to rescue Danielle. And by the time he was able to get a hold of a detective in the sheriff's department, a few hours later, the detective told him that the response had been called off. The ambulances, the fire trucks had been called off because it was discovered that Danielle was a known illegal immigrant. This is a 17-year-old who's unconscious, and that all this had been called off and the case had been transferred to Border Patrol. And we even have case files that say in plain language that Danielle was a known illegal immigrant. That was the reason for the transfer of his case. And then Danielle's remains were recovered a few days later from very close to that intersection. So Danielle did not survive. And we have no sense that there was a rapid response to save his life, and that this decision to siphon off his response, to call off local resources and send his case, his emergency case, to Border Patrol was totally based on his identity as undocumented. And so this really contradicted a lot of what we were hearing from the county of, well, we're sending Border Patrol after emergencies in this case because they're already in these kinds of cases, because they're already in the backcountry, they're already out there, they're the closest resource. and so on. And instead, we were finding that really there was a decision-making process that was based on the identity of the caller, even when we're talking about a 17-year-old kid who's unconscious, right? And so this not only entered us into some advocacy work with Danielle's family, within Coalition, to try to confront, you know, the Sheriff's Department for accountability, to really research also how widespread these practices are of bifurcating response in this way. So looking into this system a little bit, we gain access, as Parker mentioned, to several thousand 911 audio files of people calling 911 inside the borderlands who are in a life or death situation. And so we know that Pima County receives an average of 3 to 5 of these distress calls a day. So this is incredibly routine, about 1,500 of these calls a year. So we listen to just so many of these recordings. Can you kind of walk us through what a typical 911 call sounds like and what some of the abuses are that we were able to document therein?
Yeah. So yeah, listening to thousands of these calls, oftentimes the county dispatcher who receives the call is on the phone for a very short time with the person who's calling. So they'll receive a call where someone says something in Spanish, maybe like, hola, necesito ayuda. And, you know, really, as we document, as soon as they hear someone speaking in Spanish, they're already profiling the person who's calling. A lot of the times dispatch doesn't speak Spanish, or sometimes they do, will say something like, ¿estás perdido? Are you lost? And if the person says sí, or even if they don't respond, they're at that point pretty immediately starting to transfer the call to Border Patrol. So often they'll say, ¿estás perdido? And then they'll say, un momento. And then they'll start transferring the call. And so the person who's calling will abruptly hear, you know, a dial tone and some ringing. A Border Patrol agent will pick up from their call center, and dispatch will let them know the coordinates of the person calling, if they have coordinates for that person who's calling. And then usually at that point, they hang up and we don't have any further documentation of that person's continued conversation with Border Patrol. We have recordings up until the 911 dispatcher hangs up the phone.
Right. And we noted that in 68% of the calls that we reviewed, which is over 2,000 calls, 911 dispatchers lacked sufficient Spanish fluency to be able to effectively communicate with a caller in distress. So these are dispatchers in a border county in the midst of a border crisis who are not trained, not selected for being Spanish speaking, and there's no in-house Spanish translation services provided to them, which is just a massive barrier. That was one of the pieces. Do you want to talk a little bit about missing persons intakes and medical intakes, Parker?
Yeah. So relatedly to not speaking Spanish, which can cause a dispatcher to really miss information that's being communicated to them by a caller about their location or their medical condition, we find that dispatch does not ask any proactive questions to conduct a missing persons intake by asking someone, what's your medical condition? Are you alone? Do you see any landmarks? How much phone battery do you have? Anything like that. So these are really the questions that they would ask if they were receiving a call from someone who they profiled as being, you know, a U.S. citizen. And we do have those recordings as well. And we find that when they receive calls from someone who's speaking English, they have a really standard set of questions they ask that are the really like necessary pieces of information in case the call is lost that might allow them to activate some sort of search or know what resources to call. And we are finding that that is not happening in any of these calls whatsoever.
Right. And it's really shocking. So in 99% of the calls we analyzed, there's no intake whatsoever. And in the ones in which there was an intake, it seemed to be kind of on the part of the dispatcher just being curious to get a little bit more of information, but
or very brief compared to what they would do for a citizen, not a complete intake.
Yeah. And this is to paint the scenario. I mean, you can imagine people are using sometimes their last bit of cell phone battery after many days in the desert to place this call. So it's extremely important that as much information is collected at the outset, if this is the only kind of distress report that dispatch is receiving. And then part of the abuse that we're tracking too is this kind of more structural issue of this immediate transfer of callers away from county search and rescue, away from ambulance services to a border enforcement agency. And then within that, we have this lack of notice of call transfer. Parker, can you talk about the significance of that?
Yeah, so we documented in 50% of cases, there was no notice at all given to the caller that they were going to be transferred to Border Patrol. So, you know, again, this is related to dispatchers not speaking Spanish, but also to just how rapidly they're trying to transfer these cases away. And most calls you hear just un momento, but no explanation of, you know, I'm going to be transferring you to Border Patrol, I'm transferring you to another agency, anything like that. Very occasionally, you'll hear the dispatcher just say, no cuelgue, don't hang up, which even that is a really important notice that's not given in the majority of cases. And then in an additional 13% of cases, notice was given only in English to callers who were speaking Spanish. And this is really significant because, like I said, they'll just hear a really abrupt dial tone and ringing. And sometimes you can hear callers saying, you know, like, hello, hello. They don't know what's happening. And this can lead callers who, as Sophie said, are often using their last amount of cell phone battery to make this call to hang up, thinking that their call has been dropped.
And then I wanted to sort of skip ahead a little bit to what happens when these cases are transferred to Border Patrol. We know that historically there hasn't been tracking of the case. That's changed a little bit, but usually this is the moment in which Pima County hands off the case, and that's sort of the end of their involvement. And even when there's indication that Border Patrol is not responding. So in our research, we never found one case in the 2000 911 calls that we examined from 2016 to 2018. We didn't find one call where the sheriff's department mobilized in the absence of Border Patrol response. And this included cases where people were calling over and over. In March 2018, we had this really disturbing case of a man who's crossing the border contacting 911 in Pima County and calling repeatedly. He called 11 times total over the course of a 10-hour period. He was lost and alone. As the hours passed, you could hear in the recordings his condition really deteriorating, his voice starting to fade, and it was really obvious that Border Patrol was not acting to rescue him, even though his cell phone was providing coordinates that were within 5 meters of accuracy as to his location, and the dispatchers just keep transferring him to Border Patrol, and never organize a county response. And eventually the man stops calling and the outcome of his case is unknown. We have no indication that any measures were taken to save his life. And Parker, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what are some of the legal issues, the constitutional issues that we found bound up with these practices. I mean, I think that it's obvious to anyone with a heart that this situation is deeply wrong, right? That people are calling emergency line, they're inside of the United States, they're looking for help, and they're being booted away from the services that would come for us to an enforcement agency. But part of our work has been to look at sort of some of the legal issues, constitutional issues bound up with this. I was wondering if you could speak to that a little more.
Yeah, so we do find that this practice on the part of Pima County, as well as other border counties, is a violation of 14th Amendment Equal Protection, the Equal Protection Clause, which provides for equal protection under the law for all people within the United States. And that includes that the state must provide its protective services to all people and not deny them to certain disfavored minorities. And what we're finding is the denial of life-saving services to people on the basis of their immigration status, which is a violation of the Constitution. And, you know, it's not only a separate system, which in and of itself, as we know from Brown v. Board of Education, is in itself discriminatory, but it is unequal. People are clearly receiving no protective services or severely diminished protective services. So Pima County is a county that actually has pretty robust search and rescue resources that they send out regularly for lost, you know, hikers, citizens, and tourists. And these resources are not being directed at all towards people who are profiled as crossing the border. Pima County has a nearly 100% success rate when they do send out their resources. So they very rarely would call off a search without having located the lost person. Whereas Border Patrol does that all the time and mobilizes maybe like one third of the time that it receives a report of a lost person. And when it does respond, has severely diminished efforts. And this has really deadly outcomes because a quarter of those cases, those search and rescue reports made to Border Patrol that we've documented, ended in the death or the disappearance of that person.
I think it's really telling in our research. We found that really when you look at the life-saving efforts by border agencies, that, for example, Border Patrol, we found is twice as likely to take part in causing a person to go missing through these deadly apprehension methods that you mentioned, chasing the sky in the wilderness, than they are to actually participate in locating a distressed person. So we really see the way in which at best, we have a system in which reform leads the agencies that are causing this crisis to be constantly trying to address emergencies of their own making on the ground and really failing to do so. So I'm curious if you would want to just mention sort of what some of our recommendations and demands are regarding these human rights abuses that we're documenting.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's some immediate reforms that could be made on the county level that would hopefully, you know, make a difference and lead to more people being rescued. We demand that the county maintain responsibility for the outcome of all people lost and stranded, that they respond equally to people, you know, without any discrimination on the basis of perceived immigration status, so that they do activate their own search and rescue resources when they receive emergency reports. They should employ fluent Spanish speakers and have adequate in-house interpretation. They should complete full missing persons intakes at the first point of contact when they receive these 911 calls. They should be, you know, informing all callers of any sort of immediate transfer coming up, keep them informed of what's happening with their case. And those are all immediate changes that could be made and could make a real difference. But in the end, you know, we know that this humanitarian crisis is never going to be solved by search and rescue efforts. As Sophie said, you know, Border Patrol is creating and perpetuating this crisis and pushing people into danger every day. So in the end, you know, we call for the dismantling of prevention through deterrence, decriminalization of migration, and the abolition of the U.S. Border Patrol.
Well, we have to wrap up. I want to mention that, you know, a lot of our documentations from the last 5 years, the most recent being in 2022, there are new developments on the ground on the border today. There's new populations being pulled into this crisis right now in Southern Arizona. No More Deaths is responding to what has been threatened to be mass casualty situations along the border wall as families, unaccompanied children from all over the world who are seeking to claim asylum are being stranded just inside the U.S. by Border Patrol. They're trying to get to a substation to be able to present themselves for asylum, and Border Patrol has been just leaving them out in the elements for days at a time. So we have humanitarian aid workers trying to triage them, evacuate them to Border Patrol substations in an ad hoc way to try to keep anyone from dying through the night in sub-freezing temperatures in the winter. And often these volunteers are now facing the threat of arrest by Border Patrol for evacuating people to the law enforcement agency. So this is a really active situation on the ground. If you want to follow updates on that, follow No More Deaths Instagram account. There's been some reporting on that recently. And then Parker, I just wanted to ask for those listening who would like to read the full Disappeared Report series or the most recent report, where they can find that.
Yeah, you can find it at thedisappearedreport.org. You'll also be able to find a link to it if you go to nomoredeaths.org. And yeah, that'll have all four parts of the report, as well as some fact sheets and summaries, as well as some informative videos about the first three reports.
Thank you so much, Parker, for joining me. It's always such a treat to get to talk with you. And thanks to everyone for listening. Please tune in next month for our next installment of Field Notes on the Old Mole Variety Hour. And take care out there.